Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Love the sounds of Rush. You know, Rush is a libertarian band, which is another reason to listen to them, apart from their pretty awesome sound. As I promised before the break, we are bringing on somebody for which I am a great fan, and that's Jay Ambrose. Jay is a fantastic writer, and he's a syndicated columnist. He, at one point, was the editorial page editor for the Albany paper, and also has been an editor at the Rocky Mountain News, and just an all-around terrific guy. Welcome, Jay.
Hey, how are you? Thanks. That's a nice introduction.
Well, it's for a terrific guy. So.
You're absolutely my favorite radio personality.
Why, thank you. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I read your most recent editorial about Newt Gingrich and his absurd attacks on Romney, and so I'd love to talk to you a bit about that. And also, at the beginning of the show, I was talking about it's funny because I'm not a football person, but just these kind of outrageous attacks on Tim Tebow. I don't know if you want to talk about that. Or we could
talk about
Congress and how silly they are.
Tim Tebow is such a wonderful – you know what sums up Tim Tebow? And I don't remember her name. A little 12-year-old girl who has this terrible She's been dealing with, and he's had her at the ball games, and she's having one of the wonderful moments in her life right now. And you know, he deals with all of these people, some of them with terminal diseases, and he gives them hope, and he gives them pleasure, and he gives them life. So yeah, okay, all of you people out there, say boo to that, okay? Fine. You know, what kind of a
world
is that?
How can you boo something like that? I just don't get it.
Stands up and says, instead of doing the usual thing that athletes do, you know, get caught in drunken driving accidents and get
kill
accused
dogs.
Of accused of rape and so forth and so on, I'm going to help young people who are seriously ill. Oh my goodness, where have we come to?
How awful is that? I read that article in the Denver Post about that young woman, and I cried. I mean, she was just so precious, and he seems like a good guy,
I just
don't get
just
why somebody
briefly,
would be a jerk about it.
I met him just briefly. That's my claim to fame.
And, he's very handsome. I wouldn't mind meeting him.
And he was he came across just as absolutely genuine, humble, just a totally good guy. And, you know, he's not, he's just bubbling over with Christian joy. And there is something about that that is so wonderful to see. That I just, good for him.
Good for him.
If people wanna, and if people have problems with that, then let them worry about it. I go ahead.
I think some people just despise happy people. It is so alien to me why somebody would make an entire website to devote to hatred and vitriol towards some nice young man who's done well in sports. All I can think is that some people just hate happy, successful people. I don't know.
He never says, by the way, that God fixes football games. he doesn't believe that. And for people to somehow impute that to him is wrong. He lives his faith. There are a lot of us who proclaim the faith and don't live it. He lives it, and it's just a marvel to see.
I like seeing it, definitely. Well, and you know what? I think a lot of athletes do pray before a game, not to win, but just for safety, and that they'd all do the best. I pray before I do things that I'll do the best that I can.
Of course.
If it's something like skiing or whatever, it might be just for safety.
You pray for strength, and you pray for, and you know he and there is something about him that. You know, you can sense something special about his effort. You know, and there is some. I think he is spiritually propelled.
I think he's devoted to excellence.
And that happens to people, by the way. It happens to people.
I like people who are dedicated to excellence in their field, and I do find it odd that somebody would be offended by that. But
yeah,
you know, there you go.
Yeah.
It's good to make fun of the angry people, because they sort of provide the material.
Kind of brings us to politics too.
Exactly. Speaking of ugly people, Newt Gingrich is what they call it, a scorched earth campaign, where you just So let's just destroy the free market in order to get to our opponent.
There was a period there, and I've had my own personal ups and downs with Newt Gingrich over the years. You know, about the time I'm beginning to think, and there's no question he's a very bright guy, and he does know a lot of stuff. And every now and then he even seems to have some principles, but then, you know.
I don't like him.
But I don't at the moment. This is my downfall. But, you know, he was doing well for a while in the Republican contest, the Republican presidential contest, because he was doing well in debates, and he didn't seem to be his old self, and he seemed to be cheerful, and he would say in these debates, "Let's don't attack each other."
He was cheerful and clever.
How he had matured. He was in his 60s now, and he would talk about how Clinton, he told Clinton he was too young to have been president. If he'd been more mature, he'd been a better president. And I honestly thought maybe he is maturing. And now this.
No, it's the Marxist childish.
The wing of the Republican Party arises, and it's Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry. Where did this come from?
It's scary. I'm not inclined to like him because I have a problem with politicians that can't keep their pants on. And it seems to me that once you've had a couple of affairs, or even one affair for that matter, you're done. That doesn't mean that you can't be like, write books or do great behind the scenes stuff. But I think it's pure arrogance when you think you have that kind of personal baggage. And this would be true for Herman Cain as well, that you can have this kind of personal baggage and run and succeed in office or win the vote. It's arrogance, in my opinion.
Well, his personal life certainly left any number of questions, especially considering that he led the charge on Clinton. And
while he was probably having one of the affairs, I don't know that's for sure, but I mean
maybe the word hypocrisy was invented to describe him. I don't know, but it is pretty extraordinary, and the attack that he has made. By the way, he says. He got upset with Romney because of a super PAC in Iowa that began running ads about his Freddie Mac connections, which are worth talking.
They are worthwhile. That's fair game.
Still, you know, but you know, it wasn't just the Freddie Mac. It wasn't just the negative ads in Iowa. All over the nation, his polls dropped. All over the nation. Because of everyone learning about this Freddie Mac thing.
And as it should have.
He lied about it. He said it was found out that he worked for Freddie Mac, which is this quasi-governmental outfit that gave us the fiscal crisis.
Exactly.
You know, and it did so by, getting banks off the hook for giving mortgages to people who couldn't afford them, thereby ruining the lives of those people and ending up throwing the whole world.
I know. So he made a couple million dollars off of that contract.
He initially said he made $300,000. He made $1.6 million, maybe $1.8 million, depending on how you calculate it. And I didn't get into the intricacies of that. And then he said he was a historian. And I guess, you know, maybe he found out that Barney Frank came over on the Mayflower and helped. I don't know. I don't know. He was
good
a
grief.
Historian for this outfit. He was obvious. He's a rental politician.
That's good. It's true. I mean, yeah, if you're willing to work for unscrupulous bureaucratic entities that, you know, are destroying our economy, that's your prerogative, but it's also the prerogative of your opponents to bring that up.
Well, and it should have been brought up, and it was perfectly okay to bring it up. And, you know, if he had responded to it, I think it's pretty hard to respond to it, frankly. But if he had responded to it, in a more positive kind of way and hadn't been a crybaby and hadn't become the Terminator and
gone after the free market, which, you know, people are, there's a percentage of our population that is susceptible to class envy. And so when you go out with two, you know, barrels blasting against the free market and ginning up class envy, it's going to have an effect on some people, a lasting impact that goes beyond this election.
You know, one of the things that has made us exceptional is the relative classlessness of this country. Obviously, there are distinctions between people and their incomes and their education levels and that sort of thing. But we had such a sense of equality with one another through so many years. De Tocqueville wrote about this. He couldn't believe what he was seeing, you know.
And, it's true.
And, and one of the, you know, that exceptionalism carried over while all of Europe was turning toward a socialist mode, if not absolute national ownership of everything, certainly big government regulation of the kind that we're getting ever closer to here. And more socialism and more the welfare state. No, we had some hesitancy on that score. And the class arguments never worked here the way they did other places. The word bourgeoisie was not a curse word. That's middle class, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You're right.
That was never a curse word here.
People want to be middle class here.
About the proletariat, and we didn't have, and some of our great leaders. Thomas Jefferson was such a man of the people at the same time, believed in the independent farmer, and we had this extraordinary thing. And there's somebody like Newt Gingrich who's going to play this Obama game?
I know. The fact that, I think it was a recent poll out saying that there are people out there who are, you know, concerned about the so-called 1%. To me, that's evidence that some of this class envy rhetoric is working. I mean, there are people who are just naturally envious,
well,
but I think there's other people that are susceptible.
People have been playing at this game so now that everybody is anti-corporate. You know, there are literally millions of corporations in this country.
No, Jay, I'm going to have you hold that thought.
Sure.
We're going to just go over the break and then put you back on as soon as we're back. You're listening to Backbone Radio. Rename the song Sweet Home Colorado. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. We are on the line with Jay Ambrose, columnist, one of my favorite columnists. Jay, welcome back.
Well, thanks.
Now, you were sort of mid-thought when I cut you off.
Oh, what was that?
And I'm sure it was a brilliant thought.
I should have written it down. I haven't done too many of those.
It was about Newt's sort of scorched earth campaign and its effect on the American psyche.
Well, we were talking about corporations, and I mean, even long before, you know, Newt got into this game, you know, the left has been beating up on corporations. There are millions of corporations out there, and sure, some of them sometimes do bad things. So do some lawyers, some doctors, some preachers, some football players, some, you know.
Exactly.
You know, corporations, we'd be a third world country without corporations. A corporation's just a particular way of organizing. Its main thing about it is its limited liability.
Mm-hmm.
The people in corporations, they are, by the way, the word corporation, if you look it up in the dictionary, is body of people. It is that corporations are people. They have
the
rights of people. You don't lose your rights because you form a corporation. And people, you know, somehow this whole anti-corporate thing, and the anti-CEO thing, and there are, you know, I'm not saying there are no bad CEOs, but, you know, if we're going to vilify people, I mean, the very, you know what, prejudice is prejudging a whole group on the basis of a few. I mean, that's prejudice.
Exactly.
As we commonly know it. That's racism, by the way. You see somebody
or sexism.
Of a given race do something you do not like, and you say that's what the people in that race do. That's prejudice. It is awful. It is bigotry. And there is all kinds of left-wing bigotry in this country.
Well, and they're
and
very
the
selective.
Stuff is left-wing bigotry.
Every time, they turn their ire on certain things but not others. Like, so the Occupy whatever people, they'll have a Starbucks, you know, in their hand. That's a corporation. They've got, you know, they've got a bag of something from Whole Foods. That's
Boy
a corporation.
American
they arrived
corporation,
in a Subaru.
Oh.
That is a you know, yeah, there's, it's just, they're very selective. They like Target, but they don't like Walmart. Both
oh,
are corporations.
Yeah, right.
Very, very selective in their sense of injustice.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, well, and, but, But to attack Bain, by the way, and you know, which is what they're doing, and we want to talk about Romney for a little. By the way, he seems to be a wonderful family man.
He does
to talk about that. But Bain Corporation. One of the things I've learned in my reading about him and Bain was that he was brought into this at a time when corporate America, when a lot of the management in this country had gone kind of lazy because we had been sitting on top of the heap for a while, and things looked pretty good for us, that's when you knew about the three martini lunch, and there were guys who would go out and you know, and you could be relaxed, and then things began to tighten up a little bit with the Japanese beginning to challenge us and some other things. And some people had the idea, instead of just looking for good guys with a balanced sense of life to come in and manage us, why don't we grab the very top brains out there and build companies on analysis and brilliance and great brain power? And so where better to look than this program at Harvard that for the first time combined a Harvard Law degree with a Harvard Master's in Business Administration? And why don't we take somebody from the top of that class, you know, the top 5% of that class, somebody like this guy Mitt Romney, for instance, and let's put him in charge of this new outfit that's going to both start new ventures and it's going to be private equity, that is, take failing companies and try to turn them around. And you know what he did? And then we will get investors to invest money in us, such as public pension funds of various kinds and various groups that want to invest in us. And do you know what Romney did in the period from 84, I think, to 99? He gave them an 88% return, which was the highest return of any company in America to investors. How about
that? That's awesome. And we should be proud of that. I mean, I have some concerns about Mitt Romney. Some of the things he did while in office, like Romney Care, you know, the prototype to Obamacare.
I don't like Romney Care.
But his experience in the private sector, which was, you know, making money, being successful, helping businesses to become more successful, and as you said, helping these investors, pension funds, and whatnot. I would love to have an 88% return.
Let me tell you, some people, even including, say, David Brooks, who's a moderate writing for the New York Times, and sometimes I agree with him and sometimes I don't, talked about how, you know, being able to administer businesses doesn't translate into politics. Let me tell you what David Brooks doesn't know. And I had a three-month program at Harvard, and I know what they teach there, and they teach leadership. And they teach vision and strategy and how to bring your people aboard and things like that. And those are all things. And CEOs today aren't administrators so much as they are policymakers. And that, of course, is what presidents do. This is absolutely relevant.
I think so.
Absolutely,
I think it's very relevant. And it certainly beats community organizing.
The economy, not just from some abstract macroeconomic level that theorizes and pretends to be a science that economics often is not nowhere close to being, despite all the protestations to the contrary, where they give you exact numbers for something they don't have any idea is actually going to happen. And to take somebody from being down in it, who has dealt with it hand to hand, you know, and really knows the stuff, I think, and he's got a great analytical mind. I think it's a real qualification for the job.
Now, is he your favorite?
Whether he should have a job or not, it's a qualification.
Is he your favorite?
At this point, it is, almost by virtue of elimination. There are some people who didn't get in the race who would have been my favorite.
I liked Daniels, but he got out early.
I like Mitch Daniels. There are things about Chris Christie I liked an awful lot. There were others, you know, even Haley Barbour, who now let a lot of people loose.
I think he's done. I think when you parole grant.
Commute.
Exactly, you know, for murders, I think you might be done politically.
Oh, I think he was finished politically, or he would never have done what he did. But by process of elimination, there are things I like about Santorum, but things I don't.
I think I like him better than Romney, but I'm not sure he can beat Obama. And in the end, I want the guy who can win, because I would rather see somebody that I am not thrilled with sitting in the White House,
well,
rather than our
think
current
that
president.
He can't, but I think he has a lot of I think he's been pretty steady. And what the analysts have done repeatedly has been to say, if you look at the anti-Romney vote, it's greater than the Romney vote. Therefore, if he were one-on-one with somebody, he would lose. It's not true.
I don't think that's true.
It's phony reasoning. Well, I just read a poll today.
Can you hold that thought? Because we've got a commercial break on it. Could you mind staying for another segment?
No, I'll be happy to.
Oh, that'd be super. Well, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Backbone Radio.